Spartans have ascended from Hercules himself. Taught never to retreat, never to surrender. Taught that death in the battlefield is the greatest glory he could achieve in his life. Spartans, the finest soldiers the world has ever known.
It's quiet now. They came from the blackness.
Be afraid! Sparta will burn to the ground!
The thousand nations of the Persian Empire descend upon you!
What must a king do to save his world?
Instead, ask yourself, what should a free man do?
Threaten my people with slavery and death!
This is madness!
Madness?
This is coming, Tommy!
We will stand and fight!
A new age has begun.
An age of freedom! And all who know the 300 Hardcasters give their last breath to defend it! Tonight, we dine in hell! Give them nothing, but take from them everything!
We're in for one wild night.
This podcast has not yet been rated. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 35 of Comic Timing. We're getting up there, episode 35, finally. And joining us today are both halves of Geeks Unite and some other guy. We've got Raph, and we've got Juan, and then we've got that guy from Florida who likes to come in and talk about stuff every now and then, Brent. And they're all joining us here, but first let's introduce Raph, since he's one of the guys on Skype. So, what's up, Raph?
That's right. There was war waged, and in the end, we came victorious.
Yeah, 300 podcasters.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, man, doing well. Great to have you on again, and that Geeks Unite stuff, it's going pretty well.
It's doing all right. Just released episode 2, part 1 last week. Episode 2, part 2 is going to get recorded sometime this week.
Now,
and
I compare your fast track to mine, on your second episode, you have Freddie Williams. It took me about, like, 10 or 15 episodes to get a guest on that wasn't one of the regulars.
Yeah.
And wasn't, like, a CGS forum person. So you're already way ahead of me. Congratulations.
You know what? You can thank Juan for that, because while I was walking around doing my geek thing, Juan did his due diligence, and he got us a bunch of guests. So I have one thing. That's why I've locked him in as a fairly exclusive Geeks Unite co-host.
In fact, actually, just to ensure that he would always be there, he broke his computer.
Yes, that's right. That's dedication, man. He is a true podcaster.
There is nothing more than dying in the field of podcasting.
Oh, my God. And yeah, the guy on the phone is Juan. I believe your actual last name is your screen name, correct? Or am I wrong on that?
What?
No, it's not. Never mind.
My name is Juan Alberto de Jesus Delgado Rodriguez.
So it's Juan Rodriguez?
Juan de Jesus.
Oh, okay. Juan de Jesus.
It's a land issue thing in Puerto Rico. You still get to keep both names. I'm here.
Oh.
Sorry. With no computer. So I'm actually on the phone, people.
Yeah. Yeah, thing is, the CGS forum can't be checked by phone.
I know.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Thank you, and my sidekick is too slow for me to try to even load the forum.
Yeah, Raph, so go faster.
Oh, the implication here that it, not only am I the sidekick, but that I am also his emailing and phone device, ladies and gentlemen. Comic Tommy.
I was telling you, the proud member of the...
Wow. Can you tell that the episode started? Because I can't. We're also joined by Brent Cassina, who joins us every now and then. And actually, before we get into 300, dude, how the hell was MegaCon?
It's fantastic. I had a great time.
Tell us a little bit about the stuff that went on there.
I mean, I thought it was a big convention room, but it was my first con, so I don't really have nothing to gauge it on. But it was a pretty big room, like a medium-sized convention room. The only thing I had a problem with was they had all of the like big comic book art guests right when you came in the middle.
Yeah.
So they had Ethan Van Sciver, Steve McNiven, and Dave Finch all on like one table. So they're all next to each other. So the lines for them kind of intermingled when you're trying to get them to sign stuff. But what I did like is they had these volunteers with a sign. So they had, you know, the Finch guy. Line starts here, and he was across the aisle. So you weren't blocking the aisles. Oh, whereas cool. Before, that you kind of were blocking the aisles. So that was really cool. And there was a lot more people dressed up like anime than I thought there would be. Is that a normal con thing?
You know what? Honest, these days, usually the people who are dressed up are the guys that are actually dressed up like anime characters. So, yeah, that's not too much of a surprise, at least to me. Because those anime characters, those anime fans really like to dress up like their characters.
Did you see a lot of stormtroopers?
No, I didn't.
Did you see any Spartans?
I saw Lou Ferrigno with no one at his booth.
Oh. Lou Ferrigno, contrary to popular belief, not a Spartan.
And Margot Kidder has had some work done, and boy, does she look ugly in person.
Ooh.
Let me tell you.
Well, she's also 60, I think.
Yeah, I mean, she's up there, but whoever did her last plastic surgery, like, she does not look like what she does on the Superman DVDs anymore. She got some more work done. It's like Michael Jackson cheek bad, you know?
Ooh! Ouch! Not quite Michael Jackson nose, though, right?
Right. Okay. And then Kevin Sorbo was there, too. He's, like, lost 30 pounds. He looks, like, too skinny. I was like, that's Hercules? Come on! Where's the muscle, man?
Did you know that he has legendary journeys?
What?
Legendary urine? Is that what you said?
I said journeys, dude!
Journeys.
Why do you think I said what?
Legendary urine?
Yeah.
I don't know, I cut out and I heard urine.
The pee that comes out of this man is just absolutely legendary.
It's like a floodgate opening.
He takes piss like a racehorse to a whole new meaning.
He's right there in the middle of Coney Island filling up that balloon.
Yeah.
That's a New York thing.
Any key moments from the con you want to tell us about?
I was getting Ethan Van Sciver to sign the rest of my Rebirth issues.
Yeah.
Like, he signed three when I got the sketch from him before, like, at a store signing. And I didn't bring them all then, so I brought the rest this time. And I was talking to him, and I was like, yeah, I've already got a sketch from you, thank God, because he's charging $100 for, like, a sketch.
Damn.
Which I guess... Like, I got mine for $25 at the store signing, but I guess, I don't know if he didn't want to do that many, so he was charging a whole lot to, you know, deter people from, like, ordering a whole bunch of sketches, but, so I was just talking to him, and I said, you know, I saw the Sinestro annual preview pages on Wizard, and I can't wait for it to come out, and it looks freaking fantastic, and he goes, oh, yeah? Well, the whole thing's right there in front of you, so he had, like, all of it, it was inked, it was on, like, regular-sized paper, though. Like, you know, computer paper. So I was just flipping through it, and I'm telling you guys to go pre-order it when it's solicited, because that thing is going to kick your ass all the way to Christmas.
Wow.
It was amazing. And, I mean, I'm a huge Ethan Van Sciver fan, and I can't not wait.
Now, can it kick my ass to Hanukkah?
Well, Christmas and Hanukkah are on the same time, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Don't forget Kwanzaa.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, and here's a scoop for you. I said, so what are you doing after the Sinestro annual? And he goes, I'm doing a Batman project. And literally, I fucking jumped a foot in the air right there in front of him. I was like, really? Oh, my God. And then I was like, wait, I'm jumping in front of Ethan Van Sciver. I must look like a fucking retard. And I was like, I'm sorry. I really love your work. And he was like, apparently you do. Well, so yeah, that was my highlight.
I hope he's not doing the arc on All-Star Batman and Robin after Jim Lee, because you'll have to wait a while.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about Ethan. Like, he is a little slow, but when it comes out, it usually looks great.
It is, yeah, it's great stuff. It'll
still be the same year when it comes out. That's what it'll be.
Yeah. And then I got a Punisher sketch for Frank Castle from Amanda Connor. Went through a hassle to get that just because, like, these two old 40-year-old dudes, we all got in line at the same time, you know? So the first two guys got theirs, and then there's a 40-year-old dude in front of me. He got his sketch, so I was like, great, I'm next. While she's doing his sketch, his buddy shows up. I don't know if it was his partner or whatever, if they're gay or whatever. His partner shows up and proceeds to jut in line in front of me. I mean, Amanda Connor takes 20 minutes to do a sketch. I've been standing there like at least an hour and a half. My girlfriend is being nice and she's being patient, you know, because she got me the tickets and she went with me. So she's kind of like standing there even more bored than I am. I was just a little frustrated when that happened, but I got the sketch for him. He loves it, so that was pretty happy.
So worth
it. But at that time, yeah, it was worth the wait. But by that time, I was burned out of waiting in line for a sketch that I didn't want to get one myself. So
at least I'm sure you got to talk to her for a little bit.
Yeah, I did get to talk to her. And you mean, like, I was only there for a day, you know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to do other things. And, you know, this is my first con. I didn't want to waste my time getting sketches from everybody.
Get any swag?
Yeah, I got a not really free stuff, but I bought a bunch of issues for like $1.50 and a bunch of $5 trades, stuff like that.
Did you support Manhunter?
No, but it's on my pre-order list.
Okay. Good enough.
But one thing I regret not doing is going over to George Perez and saying hi. I forgot to bring anything for him to sign, so he wasn't on my list of people to say hi to.
I went over to George Perez, and I said hi. And
I didn't even know he existed.
Whoa.
No, I didn't know he was at the con. That's how bad the autograph section was. But see, we already talked about that.
I am glad that you modified that statement, though, because, I didn't even know George Perez existed. What do you mean?
I love George Perez. Perez. No coordinator draw for me. Perez.
There you go. Perez. Yeah, but
we walk right by the podcasting area to get to it. I was like, Keith, it's George fucking Perez.
Yeah, no, I didn't get to.
I couldn't leave it alone, and I couldn't like jump up and like tackle him.
Didn't we do this last episode?
Yeah.
Oh.
Snap. Hey, well, we didn't get one side of that, so, yeah, but let's actually get into what we're going to be talking about today. So there we go. You got to talk about your con at least a little bit, Brent, so now you feel loved.
Yeah, thank you again. I love you too.
Whoa.
Whoa.
It's fraternity.
You need to tell us something.
No. It's just the love between two people who have never met on the internet. Wait, that sounds
just
worse.
I'm just spreading the love.
It's okay. Guy love is okay.
Guy love.
Love.
It's comic fan love. It's not real love.
Yes, it is. But we also love 300.
It's a different kind of love.
We also love 300. Segway.
Oh, I felt the Segway.
Thank you. I ran
I want one of those. They look so cool. You can tilt on them and go fast and stuff.
I ran over you with my Segway.
Unto the Spartan battle.
Segway, man.
But yeah, 300 kicked ass.
Especially IMAX.
Oh, yeah. But
oh, my God.
I've got some things to say about IMAX. So it wasn't all perfect, but it was damn good. Brent, you saw it regular. How did you enjoy the regular experience?
I mean, I enjoyed the movie, but my problem was that I actually reread the book, like, the day that I went and saw the movie, like, right before it.
Yeah.
So instead of actually enjoying the movie, I was kind of looking forward to, you know, looking for lines and looking for, you know, shot-for-shot things. So maybe I can give you a perspective on that. But, I mean, I did enjoy it, but I have to go see it a second time just to forget about everything and just revel in it, you know?
Yeah. And I actually have I have a different perspective. I wanted to see it first and then read it, so that wouldn't really cloud my mind.
Yeah, so my enthusiasm is less than yours because I was kind of realized I've ruined my whole movie experience by reading it right before.
Ooh.
I don't know. I read it a day before, and then I let it cool off, and then I went to see the movie, and I still enjoyed it very much. But, you know...
Well, I mean, you know, there's a difference between it reading it the day before and it kind of cooling your mind, but, like, literally, I finished reading it, and then my dad was like, okay, let's go eat and then go see the movie. So, like, an hour, you know?
Ooh. You know,
wow.
That's not exactly too good an idea right there.
Yeah, so don't
too
do
fresh.
That.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon.
You gotta wait at least a couple days.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't read V for Vendetta before I saw the movie, and I did not read Sin City before I saw the movie. because
neither did I. This is the only one I've read before.
How much
V for Vendetta is radically different?
It is, yeah, it is radically different. But how much did this change your experience from when you saw the movie first and then read the book, as opposed to reading the book first and then seeing it? I mean, again, take away the fact that you only read it a couple of hours before, but how different is it to know the source material before going into it?
It was different. Like Sin City, I did not read until I saw the movie. Like, all I read was the articles that said, it's pretty much shot for shot the comic book. So I went into it not knowing the story and everything, and that just blew me away, because Sin City was great.
Yeah.
This one, like, I got 300, I guess, a year ago for my birthday. And just because I knew there was a movie coming out. So I've been following, like, this movie, I guess, for the past, 8 months or whatever, just been anticipating it. And it's been building and building, so I was really, really excited that I was kind of pissed off that I ruined it for myself by rereading it like an hour before. But I would definitely say that, knowing the source material, you can look forward to things like, the Dying in Hell stuff. There was kind of like, that was all in the previews, but there were some moments like the Persian emissary came, and they cut off his hand. And there's that thing, give my hand, you cut off my hand. And the guy goes, the Spartan goes, it's not your hand anymore. In the book, he says, it's not your hand anymore, and the whip as well. Like, it's little things like that I noticed because I just read it. I mean, it didn't take away from anything, but pretty much there were a lot of shots that were based on the comic.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes they were flipped, but like that shot where Leonidas is drawing out the battle plan for the old, like, pimply dudes. Yeah, the E-Force.
E-Force.
They look like the thing out of the Bruce Jones Nightwing, right? Sorry, I had to do that. Back to the E-Force. That overhead shot is in the comic book. Mm-hmm. But, looking at it now, like, I have it in front of me. I think it's less of a shot-for-shot thing than Sin City was.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely took a lot of inspiration. The Persians riding over that hill and stuff, and the horse rearing up and him pulling out the heads, that's in the comic.
Okay.
I mean, like, the big iconic things in the comic are there. When he's fighting the wolf, and the wolf's kind of circling him, and seeing him kill the wolf through the shadow, that's in the comic, that's in the movie. So the big iconic things are here. But, I mean, other than that, I think he took some visual liberties just to improve the storytelling. Just so it was was different from Sin City in a way.
Sure, yeah. Anybody else here read it, by the way? Either before or after?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of it.
Before.
Okay, all right. You read it the day before one?
Yeah, and then I let it cool down.
Okay, and your comparison between book and movie?
I'm on the same boat as Brent. There are a lot of shots, the key shots that, made the book so iconic are inside of the movie. But there's other shots that they just have to take liberties with just to make the story more visually appealing. And I'm glad that they didn't try to stick shot for shot, because some shots that work in comics don't work with film. And when you try to do that, you get a Joel Schumacher film.
Fat nipples.
And a neon red sky at all hours of the day.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
Get in the chopper. Do it now.
Can you take my Visa Bat credit card?
Oh, God.
Never leave home without it.
Oh man, but no, I agree with you completely with that one, because again, there are certain liberties you have to take in order to make it feel like a movie. And actually, comparing Sin City to the book, I realized there probably could have been a couple of changes made, and it still would have been perfectly fine. You didn't have to go shot for shot with that. I mean, it's not just a storyboard, it's a comic book. And comic book to movie conversion is going to be a bit jarring sometimes.
Well, what I think happened was with Sin City, Robert Rodriguez, I think, lost his ability to be in the Directors Guild.
Yeah.
Because he gave Frank Miller almost direct access to the director's chair. While I think it was Zack Snyder for this one. He directed the movie with Frank Miller, pitching in certain things.
I don't even think Frank Miller was that. Like, he has an executive producer credit, but like reading things, he wasn't on set every day.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was too busy writing scripts for All-Star Batman and Robin.
And, well, he's doing the Spirit also.
And the Spirit.
He's laughing his way to the bank.
Yes.
Actually, that's true.
In all seriousness, though, he did have a hip injury, so that's probably one of the reasons why he might not have been there.
He's weaning his way to the bank.
Yeah,
he got hurt doing the Bat-toosie.
See, now we're just being cruel.
Okay.
Jim Lee and a huge pencil. Anyway.
Yeah, right, right, sure. But, Raph, what about you? I mean, you are in the middle of reading it. In the middle of your reading now, compare it to the movie.
I'm at the part where they just get to the hot gates.
Okay.
And, yeah, I mean, it's not a shot for shot. It's not like every single panel in a book so far is in a movie. But it's in the spirit of it, you know. It's and also, I think the big difference is, that I've heard from others, is that the more fantastical elements from the movie aren't in the book, because I think Frank was a little more faithful to the history.
Yeah. So the monsters and stuff are still in there, right?
Well, I mean, like the orc look for the immortals. Uh-huh. I'm not up to that part yet. I'm not sure if that's in the movie.
No, how they're ugly underneath.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not in the book. You'd never see their face.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that big fat guy with the blades for hands.
Oh yeah.
He's not in the book.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Because
the elephants are in the book. I don't think the rhino is.
Okay.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, there's nothing much else. I mean, that Euphrates guy that betrays him, the hunchback, he's in the book. That's pretty much the only real fantastical element in the book.
But that rhino made the frickin' movie. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, that shit was awesome.
That was cool.
Oh my god. I mean, just
especially with that spear to the eye.
Oh yeah. Nah, definitely. I mean, come on. See any rhino being used in a battle? How often do you see that?
And then seeing him stop dead.
What was great about when they introduced the rhino is that the Greeks were like, "What the hell is that?" You know, they're like, "What the hell is that?"
And that one Spartan.
Yeah, it was the lieutenant's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The captain
jammed that fucking spear right through it. Shit was awesome.
Yeah, and Faramir's in the background going, "Horrible mystical creatures."
You're just going to have to...
I don't know how he got from Middle Earth here, but this is pretty cool.
All right. The guy can play other characters.
No, I love him. I love that guy. He's terrific.
I know. That kind of was in my mind, too, while I was watching it, so I can understand why you keep bringing that up. But compare the actual actors to the characters. How close in likeness were they to the book?
Leonidas, I think, pretty close.
Leonidas is really the only... Like, there are other characters in the book, but they just have names and they're not really fleshed out. I think they're more fleshed out in the movie than they are in the book.
Okay.
I mean, in the book, you have the Arcadian captain is like a little minor character. You know, the queen, she's only on like 4 pages in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Leonidas is on every page. He's the most developed character in here. Him and Xerxes. And everybody else is just a background Spartan.
So there's... Yeah. The whole subplot and the whole rape and all that, well, not exactly, well, I guess sort of rape, that happens later on, was that actually in the book?
No, okay, that was new.
Okay.
But I'm kind of glad they did that, because we got to see that hot, hot sex scene in the beginning.
Geez. Yeah.
That woman is beautiful. Lena Headley.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
I did actually have some problems with the fact that she gave herself up so easily for the other guy, though.
Oh, yeah, but it was worth it because it paid off in the end. Yeah,
but he didn't do anything. Why did she trust him? She honestly thought she could trust that guy? Come on.
Yeah, I guess she was just going by good faith or whatever.
I just think it was for the sake of storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that story didn't really need to be told.
I think that's it softens the movie because the queen is not in the book at all. Like, it's only four pages or something like that. But
yeah.
It's just, you know, so that it's not a pure kill fest. I mean, you know, you can maybe get a little love story in there for the non-comic book fans that are in there that just want to see the blood and gore.
They were showing how strong a real Spartan woman could be.
Yeah, that too.
She did it for her husband. She did, and she did it for the kingdom. She didn't really do it.
I did think it gave the story a little something else. Troy had a love story. Gladiator had a love story.
Yeah.
You want to compare these other swords and sandals epics. I think without it, we might have gotten tired of all the fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pause. A nice break to the fighting.
Yeah.
Because it was so over the top, you know?
And I mean, don't get me wrong, I liked the scenes that she was in. I just kind of have a bit of a qualm with the fact that she gave herself up so easily like that.
Well, it's worth it for the line. You're not going to like this. It's going to hurt. Yeah,
but it paid off in the end when he died and all the gold fell out and they're calling him traitor, traitor.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect.
I think that
with the mob mentality.
When that scene happened, I definitely think that storyline paid off. I was like, you know, I'm glad they did this.
And the entire theater was cheering when that happened.
Yeah, it was terrific.
Yeah. Now, the IMAX experience for Rafa and Juan and myself who got to see it in IMAX. This is the first movie I actually saw in IMAX, as opposed to, say, like, the Liberty Science Center in New Jersey, where I get to see, like, you know, trees, whoop-de-frickin-do, you know? Yeah, right. It's the first true movie I've seen in IMAX. And again, this is a very different IMAX experience, because the IMAX at Science Center is actually all the way along the ceiling. Mm-hmm. So you're basically angled up the entire time, and you're basically forced to look at the ceiling. Because if you look away, then you're not watching the movie.
Is that like a dome, that one?
Yeah. Yeah, that one's a dome.
Yeah.
See, there's a difference. We have one of those here, too, at the Science Center. Uh-huh. It's called our Cinedome.
Yeah.
And that just shows the nature films, whereas we have a movie theater down here that has an IMAX screen.
That's exactly, yeah. And that's
exactly it's a dedicated IMAX.
But all they show on that IMAX screen is movies.
Yeah.
Not really IMAX films, necessarily.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The IMAX at Liberty Science Center only showed most of the same sort of thing, only, like, documentaries and that sort of stuff. And every now and then, they would show something else. I think they actually had, like, one special showing of a movie there. And that's really it. The rest are all, like, nature films and all that. But this is the first IMAX screen showing that I've been to. And I gotta tell you, film flaws are so much more obvious in an IMAX showing than they are
when they're 30 feet tall.
Yeah, I mean, specifically when there's dirt in a reel, there's dirt in a reel.
Oh yeah, you see it, and you see it like right on that person's chest.
And it's their chest huge.
Is regularly smooth, and there's like this big speck of dirt like right above his nipple.
Wow, you really
looking at his nipple.
Lots of nipples over you.
I can see the people's pores.
Are you making sure his nipples are shaved, too?
Yes. I'm counting hairs here.
The nipple agent.
Well, thanks for joining me, guys. Yeah, this has been fun, and
oh, my God.
Yeah, no, but I do know what you're talking about there, because it was kind of weird, because every now and then I'd be like, what the hell is that on his face? And then I realized, no, that's not on his face, that's on the film.
Yeah.
And
you would think that they'd go digital for that or something.
They're actually going digital now with a lot of movie theaters. It's finally been okayed. For a while there, they were fighting it. I don't know why they would, because, again, I like film for what it is. I understand the aesthetic value of using film. But if it's a digital movie, like 300 was, and you're converting it over to film, you sort of lose something.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I've seen three movies in IMAX already, 300 being my third. But two of them, Batman Begins and 300, they were non-dedicated digital IMAX movies. And Superman Returns was, you know, it was 3D. So it was actually dedicated it was digital. And I can tell you, the difference is so stark between Superman Returns and 300. The quality is so much different. It's so much better, actually. With Batman, because it's so dark, you don't get to see a lot. The dirt doesn't really bother you as much because it's really dark. But with 300, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like, there were scenes where just you'd see black dots, and you're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, because color is so important in 300.
Yeah, especially because, it's a really vibrant, colorful movie, actually.
It is. And, I mean, that's obviously all achieved via special effects.
Yeah.
I mean, that washed-out feel that you had through it, it felt like history. Yeah, you know, it felt like you were thumbing through the books of time, you know, and you just happened to come upon this event, and this is how it, like, looks like, and sort of, like, the entire movie is told in a flashback aspect, which really works with the color.
Yeah.
And it had like, this hue throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
You know, like that old page on a book, so I know, I got that same feeling, too.
Yeah, and did anybody have a problem with the digital effects? Because, again, it doesn't feel natural, but at the same time, it looks really, really pretty to me. I mean, Brent, did you enjoy the digital effects for what they were?
I enjoyed it. I thought they worked a little better in Sin City.
Uh-huh.
Because it was black and white. You know, most of the times when they have the digital effects, they have a real background to blend it in with. But here, I think some of that was lost. I guess some of the backgrounds, it just looked do digital. Like when the queen was giving her speech in front of the council or whatever,
yeah,
you could tell the difference between what they built on the set, which was actually the steps and stuff, and then the difference between that and what was outside was drastic. Like when they showed like the rest of the town outside of those columns.
Yeah.
If you looked at the floors, like the floors almost didn't match up in some points.
Okay.
So I mean, I think it worked some of the time because it had that color palette. They kept it kind of monochromatic, the bronze and red during the day. And then at night, they had the blues and the greens and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it works because it had that color scheme. Whereas if there were more colors, I think some stuff might have been lost more.
You know, it sort of created like an effect where you were always either at dusk or dawn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because again, that golden hue is what a lot of filmmakers go for to get very powerful scenes. Well, this is what was that 24/7. You don't really see that too much in movies.
Well, and it made it feel ancient too, like you're looking at an old papyrus scroll or something.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm all for that.
Now on the IMAX thing, because I saw episode 3 or episode 2 on IMAX.
Yeah.
When I was watching those, I kind of felt like I was losing something because the actual movie was still bigger than a regular movie screen.
Yeah.
But I felt kind of gypped because it didn't take up the whole IMAX screen. Like, you know, he had those excess spaces. It was like watching it on a TV. Uh-huh. It had the black bars above it, and I was kind of disappointed in that.
We
guys,
did not
we didn't
actually
have that.
Get those.
No, because we got a dedicated IMAX version of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was beautiful.
This was before then. Then they did
for
that.
IMAX. Yeah. Just like Spider-Man 3, when that comes out, there's going to be the regular version, and there's going to be the IMAX version.
And we're seeing that in IMAX.
No.
Well, of course.
No, I'm not going to see it in IMAX.
Well, you know what? I'm going to see it 10 times in a regular theater and maybe 5 times at IMAX. That sounds about right. Good ratio.
Well, you know, to me, again, it's $15 for an IMAX in Manhattan, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And
how much is a regular movie?
A regular movie is
10 bucks.
And I'm thinking to myself, is it really worth it?
You should drive to Jersey and get it like the $8 instead of 10.
Well, if I had a car, yeah, that'd be a wonderful idea, but I don't.
Okay, well, I heard Juan has a car, and he's driving you guys to CGS 300 with
the Grey Goose.
That's just automatically volunteered me for without me even having my car.
You're welcome.
Well,
I knew you'd offer anyway.
It's not time for it yet.
That's what you get for being a sidekick.
Exactly. Oh. Who's the sidekick now, bitch?
Touché.
Beautiful. But it's just the fact that you're paying an extra basically $5 in the end really doesn't feel like it's really worth it for me. And I really don't feel like I'm missing too much by going to regular screen because, again, because of the fact that those film errors are so obvious – I'd rather watch it on a regular screen where it's not that apparent and then spend the money that I would have spent there towards the DVD version, which I'll eventually own.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, if Spider-Man 3 was digital and IMAX, would you go see it?
Maybe.
Because then the film errors wouldn't be as
it'd be apparent. Non-existent.
I'd be much more inclined to do so. Yeah, I doubt it's actually going to be digital in IMAX. It's going to be IMAX, but it's definitely not digital. So,
do you think the sound quality was better in the IMAX?
Ooh, good question,
it was
actually.
Booming.
When
Leonidas screams, you really feel it.
Well, it was loud in the theater I was in, too. I think, you know, that's just the mixing, but do you think the sound quality might have been better?
Call me crazy, but I thought it was too loud at parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely felt that sometimes.
Well, 90% of the dialogue is screams, so I don't know.
No, it was not.
It's 74% of the dialogue.
It was
are you
not.
Sore?
Good morning!
It was not screamed. I thought that I went in there thinking a lot of it was going to be screamed.
Yeah.
But really, it was just the parts they show in the preview.
Yeah. You know,
it's battle scenes
right
and
away,
stuff like that.
Right away, I think of the SNL parody from the 70s, The Loud Family.
Yeah.
Good morning!
Ian, were you alive in the 70s?
No, but I've watched old SNL.
Same here.
But, no, I mean, was I the only one who thought that it was mixed a little bit too loud? I mean, Juan, did you have that problem at all?
I did. I walked out with a bit of a headache. But I don't know if it was Raph screaming or the Spartans.
Was Raph screaming the lines while you were sitting next to him?
He didn't. He just screamed, "This is Sparta." Like,
well, a bunch of guys did it, too.
He got into the theater. Like, this was like an hour before the movie. He showed up, and I said, "Hey, what's up?" And Joe said, "Hey, what's up?" And he goes, "This is Sparta!" And like, the six guys in front of us, like, look, turn around.
Okay, like, now for everyone out there, did Raph show up in that leather thong that he said he was going to?
No, thank God.
No, I'm not that fanboy.
Thank God.
He wasn't that guy.
Yes, I'm not that guy.
He wasn't that guy, but that guy was sitting in back of us.
Yes, he was. Oh, yeah.
Really?
No,
really?
No. Although, okay, here's the thing. There was a dude sitting in back of us, and again, simple theater annoyance.
The whole fucking show, right?
Thank you.
Yes, I turned around like three times.
So did I, yeah. No, so like, every now and then you just heard this.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. Just
again, I turned around. I'm like,
what, he ain't sucking his straw?
No, he was just sucking on his teeth the entire time.
Like, yeah. If he had a piece of broccoli lodged in there.
Yeah, exactly. Like what you do to get something out, but he did it the entire frickin' movie.
No, you turn around and say, "Dude, shut the fuck up." Make everyone else look at him, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then he'll stop.
That'd be awesome. Although, since it's 300, I have to go, "Dude, shut the fuck up!"
Shut the fuck up, or I'll cut your throat. And use your body for mortar.
Oh, man.
More hand is mine.
Yeah, but, I like the fact that everybody there seemed to be a geek.
Yeah,
except
that was awesome.
Except their girlfriends, who except they dragged the along.
Exactly,
they're like,
yeah.
Oh, it's probably
okay,
nice.
Okay, your girlfriends. Okay, now I have something to talk about. Your girlfriends, did they like it?
Okay, my girlfriend is a geek and a nerd and reads comics with me, so yes, she enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, okay. My girlfriend Maria Sharapova didn't like it.
Because I took my girlfriend, and she absolutely hated it.
Really?
She thought there was no plot. I mean, my girlfriend, we went to see Batman Begins, and she loved that movie. She likes the Hellboy movie. She loves Superman Returns. And we saw Ghost Rider. She liked that. We saw this one, and she thought it was terrible. She was like, this is a waste of 2.5 hours of my life.
Okay, Brent, but does she realize that the plot is a fucking battle?
I keep telling her that. She still doesn't get it.
Okay, see.
That's why
she's not a geek.
Did she want a tea party? Seriously.
She's not a geek. She didn't want a tea party. She knew going in it was going to be bloody. I guess she was expecting more.
It's a battle.
All you could do with it. It's a giant battle.
Okay, let's be honest.
So much with it.
Let's be honest. Plot wise, you know, there wasn't a lot to this movie. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
One wave comes. They're the newbies. They die. Second wave is the immortals. The third wave was the arrows and the, you know, the monsters and shit. Right.
Yeah.
That's not much of a plot.
True. Although, actually, I want to ask this quickly here. More or less plot in the movie than in the book?
Less, I think.
Well, yeah. you have those boxes that have everybody's thoughts and ideas in them, so yeah, definitely there's more plot in the book.
I thought the book carried the plot along more than the movie did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way the comics are.
Well, wasn't the narration the box?
Yeah, the narration that you heard from David Wenham are the narration boxes in the comic.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure on that because it would make no sense to have such a great narration and not have it be the narration from the comic.
Well, you could have Sam Elliott do it.
True.
He makes everything. He could read "This is a turd of shit." That'd be awesome.
Or better yet, no, my favorite moment of War of the Worlds, that frickin' Morgan Freeman voiceover.
Oh, yeah, I love
at the beginning.
Shawshank Redemption.
And at the end. Because, God forbid, they actually show in the movie all of the aliens dying. Instead, all you hear is, it's a shame.
And all the aliens died.
Yes, it's a shame that the aliens didn't realize that our environment would kick their ass.
All you had to do was sneeze. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
No, I would have taken to another level. I would have just farted on it. Peace.
Death by Ebola.
But going back to the plot in the movie versus the book, I think the book has – it felt like it had more plot just because the way the comics are.
Yeah.
you know, the size of the panels are different on each page. I think that helps. Whereas the movie, you know, you have the movie screen. That's your frame. And it's that's going to be the same every time. You know, you can have wide shots, still shots, whatever. But in the book, you know, Frank Miller does a whole page. He does, you know, super tiny panels like Adam Kubert or Andy Kubert's doing in the Superman Action Comics book, you know.
Yeah.
We're like squinting to see his face. He does that thing. So it's a little more varied than in the movie.
Yeah, there's a lot more exposition to visual storytelling.
Yeah, in the comic than there is in the movie.
Yes. Yeah, but there's also caption boxes in the panels that you can't put on the screen. Like, can you imagine caption boxes on the screen?
Well, that's why you have the narration.
What I'm saying is that in the movie, you're limited by what the actors could do.
Exactly.
While in the book, you could tell a whole bunch more. You could tell a lot of story just by the way the characters are standing in opposition to each other. You know, their symmetry, things like that.
Speaking,
I think that's why the book felt a lot more with a lot more plot than the movie.
How did the actors do? That's a good question to ask, actually. I mean, do you feel any of them were not nearly as good as you wanted them to be, or were you actually overall happy with most of the performances? Any ones that stand out as bad or good that you like to point out, Juan?
I like Xerxes. I just wish he had more screen time, like in the book. I really do wish we got to hear more, you know. Just the guy's a freak, and I loved it.
No, and he had more screen time in the... I thought he had more screen time in the movie than in the book. Maybe it's the same. It just felt that way because
I think they might have cut some lines from the book. Like, I gotta dig through my long box, but I don't mind pulling it out. I think they cut some lines from the book, you know, just because they were like, it was elaboration on what he had already said.
Yeah.
I thought they elaborated in the movie more than, because in the book, there are a few word balloons, and I didn't feel there was much more to that. Hold on, let me look. Well, keep talking.
One thing that I definitely need to say about Xerxes in the movie is the fact that, and again, all you Stargate SG-1 fans are going to know exactly what the hell I'm talking about here, but he was channeling Apophis the entire time he was on the screen. And
I think he's the voice for all those Goa'uld.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he felt like a freaking Goa'uld the entire time.
Hello, Leonidas.
Wouldn't they pitch his voice around and stuff?
Yeah, no, sure they did. But, I mean, just the fact that they were able to... He felt so much like Apophis. In his body language, in just, like, his mannerisms in general. And, obviously, that's because they're similar characters. They both have that sort of same air around them. But that's all I could think of all movie long. Holy shit, it's Apophis.
But you forget, this is...
Are you sure that wasn't the same actor?
I don't think it was.
No.
It's Rodrigo Santoro. He's supposed to be in Lost, but I haven't seen him recently.
He's also the guy who, in Charlie Angel's Full Throttle, is the surfer.
Well, whoopity do.
That's how.
Did you like his voice in the movie? I thought that was kind of weird.
I liked it. I liked it because, again, I liked Apophis.
It worked for me.
It was over the top, but I liked
it. Just because of that same thing that Ian's talking about. You know, I love that alien voice. It's like, it goes back to Robotech, that deep voice. You know, that gets me all the time.
And again, it was a better effect than, say, like putting like a really bad voice filter on it to make it deep.
Mm-hmm.
This was subtle. This was subtle to the point where, you know, it could have been somebody's real voice or it could have been, you know, fake. For hell, if they wanted to get a real voice, all you had to do was get, what's his face from Star Trek? I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Michael Dorn?
Yeah, there you go, Michael Dorn. To do the voice. Yeah, all you needed was Worf, and that's it. Because, you know, I mean, the voice filter made him sound enough like Worf that, you know, they could have just pulled a Darth Vader and had somebody else voice him.
If you were any other man, I'd kill you where you stand.
Okay, but versus the more Xerxes in the book than the movie, first time we see Xerxes is when he's talking to Leonidas.
Yeah.
That pretty much, it looks like it's this, maybe, I don't know, looking at it now, it feels like they had a little more in the movie. Because that scene in the book's only 2 pages.
Okay.
And then
the movie in order to get, you know, Leonidas moving around.
Maybe. And then the next time you see him is he's overlooking a battle where his immortals are losing, which was in the movie. And then the time after that is when the Hunchback is telling him where the pass is.
Yeah.
Now, here's where I thought they expanded on it a lot. Because, you know, all the naked, ugly girls that were dancing around him, that was like 5 minutes in the movie. That's four panels, two medium-sized panels and two small panels in the book.
Damn.
And a transsexual named Sandy.
And in the book, in the movie, Xerxes says all that crap, you know, I am kind, Leonidas is a bastard, is cruel. He said that a lot. He only says that a couple times in the book. And then the next time you see him is at the final battle where he says, or where his emissary says, take off your helmet, Leonidas, and he gets hit by the spear. And that's it. So, you know, he's not in it a lot to begin with in the book or the movie.
So they basically used him as much as they could.
Yeah.
And I mean, for what they used him for, I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Frank Miller was inspired by this movie, The 300 Spartans. I got my hands on a copy of that, actually. I started watching it. It's a different movie. It's a movie made in the 60s, and it's like one of those talking movies, like where everybody talks before they do anything. I've watched the first 10 minutes. It's all about how Xerxes is getting revenge because of his father's failure at Marathon and how the Greeks are planning.
So it's a Claremont.
This is the second Peloponnesian War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is it goes, if you really want story, you'll watch that movie because that movie inspired Frank Miller to do 300.
Yeah.
But it's a lot.
But again, talking movies again, all I can think of is a Chris Claremont comic. I'm going to hit you with my bare fists.
I think as a comic, like ignoring all the history, I mean it was in there in the comic a little bit, but you have to go research it to really understand it.
Yeah.
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 And I think that that works for a comic book, but maybe for the movie, I think I would have appreciated a little more history in the movie for people who don't know about it.
Premises of history, you know, he didn't show that, you know, that an extra band of Greeks that they met on the road was 700 Greeks. It wasn't like 100, you know. So there was 1,000 Greeks at the battle. There was only 17,000 men, huh?
It was 7,000 Greeks at the battle, actually.
Yeah, 7,000.
All right, 7,000. You see? It's so, what time is it? It's almost 1 o'clock. so 7,000 Greeks, you know, versus God knows how many Persians, you know. And the battle happened at Thermopylae, you know, at the way it came out in the movie. There was a traitor. He wasn't a mutant, and he wasn't from Sparta. He was from he was a million Greek or something like that. So they got the basic concepts right.
Okay.
But, you know, you don't need history. It's a work of fiction, you know. It is a movie.
And one of the major changes I know that they made from the book to the movie is what happens to the Hunchback in between being turned down and ending up at Xerxes' door. Now, if I heard this correctly, he actually falls off a cliff.
Yeah, he falls off a cliff and survives somehow.
Wow.
It's not really, like, clear on it. But, yeah, in the movie, he just kind of stays there.
Yeah.
But I think that makes sense for the movie, because a mainstream audience, you know, if he falls off a cliff, he's supposed to be dead, right? Usually in the movies, you fall off a cliff, you die.
Well, with a hump that big, he probably could have gotten saved by the hump.
He probably bounced, you know?
It would strain out his back.
Yeah, right.
But I think...
Leonidas from neck to thigh.
Or wait, did Lee? Let me see. I thought Leonidas pushed him or something. Hold on, let me fucking find it.
Yeah, fucking find it.
No, he jumps.
Okay.
He jumps because he's frustrated.
Gotcha. I don't have to take this. I'm going home!
Doesn't he also, like, at the end of the book, doesn't he kill himself for betraying Leonidas and everybody?
No, I think he got hit by a spear in the book.
Okay. I haven't gotten to that part, so...
Hold on.
Because in the movie, we don't really find out what happens to him, right?
Yeah, no, he just kind of stands there, he looks ashamed.
He just says, I hope you live a long time.
Yeah, okay.
No, he lives.
Oh, he does live? Okay.
He's not killed outright in the book.
Okay.
Okay.
And, I mean, I sort of do like the idea of him falling off the cliff and surviving, but it's not exactly believable. So
yeah.
I can see why they didn't go with that, but it does bring an entire new, I guess, I don't know, I mean, it does bring an interesting, like, idea to the character, though. You know, like that's, like, I mean, he shames himself, and he falls off a cliff, and then he goes to Xerxes. what's the motivation for going to Xerxes then?
Well, he couldn't kill himself, so maybe he feels like he has to go to Xerxes. He, like, his first choice was kill myself.
Yeah.
Because as a Spartan, it's victory or death, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that he thought he was a Spartan, so that's his first choice, kill himself.
Yeah. And by the way, it's victory, death, or mystery box.
Okay. Victory or death, so that's his first choice. Yeah. He gets neither.
Yeah.
So then, technically, he's not a Spartan anymore.
True.
So he's rid himself of his Spartan-ness, I guess, in that act.
Yeah.
So now he feels he can do whatever he wants to. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to Xerxes.
Yeah.
But that still clashes for me for a little bit because, you know, in the movie and in the book, he's like, Leonidas, give up, you can live, you know. He's still sympathetic to Leonidas.
Yeah.
Whereas if I went to Xerxes and totally ratted him out, I'd have been like, kill that motherfucker. Like Luke Cage just, back in the 70s.
I was about to say, I'm so happy you turned him into a like angry black man.
Job, turkey.
Tie the neck, right, bitch? Tie the neck, huh?
Jibba jabba.
Shazam!
Jabba jaw. Wow!
Oh my God!
It's Jabba Jaw.
Yeah, but I mean, you sort of need to have a bit of sympathy for the hunchback at some points because.
Well, it's a goddamn hunchback. How much do you need to have?
Well, dude, I mean, the fact that he wants to be a Spartan so bad, and he's turned down for it.
I think that I really like in the book and in the movie the way they did that raise your shield thing.
Yeah,
I thought that was great.
Yeah,
that's just like, great storytelling.
You're crippled. We're not going to take you.
Well, it's not. It's
the letters.
No, but that's you know he's not rejecting him because he's weird looking. He's rejecting him for a real reason.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
he can do the job.
Yeah. I mean, had he been able to lift it to the point where he needed to lift it, then he'd be on the line with them right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would.
Yeah.
And that shows what kind of character Leonidas is. I almost said Leonardo.
Now that's another, Ninja Turtles. That's another podcast. That's coming soon.
Yeah, that's in 2 weeks.
Exactly. Can't wait. Here's in a half shell. But and actually the last thing that Mako recorded before he died. So I'm actually really looking forward to that. But you guys know who Mako is, right?
Yeah.
Right.
He's a very famous. He's a famous Japanese actor who's been doing voices for ages.
He's doing Splinter.
Yeah, he's doing Splinter, and it's the last thing he did before he died.
Yeah, he died.
Yeah, and he was also doing the voice of the uncle on Avatar.
Oh.
Yeah, and now somebody else is taking over that. I'm sorry, I'm a huge Mako fan, so that's why I needed to point that out. But let's go back to 300. Now, the screen composition of the movie is also something that's going to be very, very different from most movies, as you had a lot of stop, turn, and start again. And the last movie that really did stuff like this was The Matrix. And obviously, this is not The Matrix. This is freaking 300 here. I felt like it worked a lot better here than it did in The Matrix. Just the fact that the fight scenes felt like they were still going on naturally as opposed to freaking bullet time. And there were some moments that it was a bit jarring for me, but most of the time, I kind of liked the angles. Raph, what did you think about the angles?
Well, I thought they were great because they did it really two times that I remember. It's the first time was when we see Leonidas fight, and I thought that was great because we get to focus on the king and get to see how much of a Spartan warrior is. And then the next one I remember is the two guys fighting, the lieutenant's son and his friend, and that was terrific because you just kind of... It just sort of had this, like, you know how in Kung Fu movies, you know, they all fight, like, in one motion. It's not like you punch, you stop, and you punch again. It's one flowing motion. I really like that about the movie, like, the fighting of the movie.
Yeah.
It's just, you stab someone with the spear, you immediately turn, block the shield, throw the spear, pull your sword out, block another hit, stab, cut someone's leg off. It was nonstop, and I really, you know, that's how I think a Spartan would be like. It wouldn't be like... In other movies where you just kind of have people go, you know, I stab you, you know, it's really slow. And I really enjoyed that part. The slowdown really, really helped me, like, see all the stuff that was going on, too. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and also a guy who usually really, really appreciates long shots, you had a lot of really great long shots in this movie. You know, like, no, like no cut shots that, you know, with utilizing the, you know, camera turns that they did, you didn't need cuts, which was so awesome about it. That basically took the place of, you know, cutting from one place to another, like, say, like the like what the Lord of the Rings did.
Yeah.
Juan, what was your take on the camera angles?
Well, I liked that you could see the devastation that one man, especially Leonidas, did just with that one spear. Like, he killed, like, I think, like, 10, 15 people, like, in the opening rush that they had when they broke formation. And the shot was good for that. But towards the end, when they used that type of shot for the lieutenant, because he had lost his son, and he had lost the spear, he was being stabbed, and he was using his sword, and then he used his shield like Captain America,
yeah,
and flung it at that guy's throat. That shot worked for me because it was slow enough that you could see him grab the shield and fling it. It wasn't just like something that kind of happened.
Yeah.
So if they had cut the shot or if they had used a regular speed shot, you wouldn't be able to see the intricacy of his movements.
So that's why
it worked for me.
It has a lot more emphasis, mm-hmm. a lot more motion than it would in the regular shot.
I think it just shows, you know, that they're trained, like Raph was saying, their training is so embedded in them that it just flows naturally out of them.
Yeah.
And if you were going at regular speed, you wouldn't be able to see most of this.
True.
So the slowdown was beneficial.
And, you know, to me, it actually sort of showed how quickly battle happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by actually slowing down the film, it helped me realize how fast this is actually happening. So it's kind of weird to look at it that way, but that's sort of the effect it had on me, because if this would be at regular speed, we'd be missing so much.
No, I agree, because, you know, like, I do kendo, and most of the high-ranking people's fights are 30 seconds max.
Yeah.
You know, the younger kids have 3-, 4-, 5-minute fights because they don't know how to score.
Yeah.
But the higher in the ranks you get, the faster the matches get. Sometimes there's a blink of an eye, and there's 2 points scored, and you're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, remind me never to piss you off, by the way.
That's right, Hulk Smash!
There can be only one.
Have you seen that picture, by the way?
No, I haven't, actually.
Oh, no Nolander jokes, please.
But there can be only one Nolander.
Yes, exactly.
I'm getting the giggles.
Oh, man.
I think he's talking about the Spano picture. He's holding Spano and he goes Hulk Smash.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Brent, what did you think about the angles? I mean, do you have any problems with them?
No, I didn't have any problems with them. I read a review that said this whole movie is in slow motion, and that kind of scared me a little bit. But I didn't think it was slowed down that much when you compare it to The Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
You know, The Matrix, you saw the bullets dropping second by second, and it was a lot slower than this one. So this one, I thought it less of a slowdown and less of slow motion than actual clarity to the battle. Like what, Juan, you were saying, you know, you could see everything that's happening, whereas usually, like if you watch Troy or some other thing, you can't really tell what's going on unless they have a wide shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's one of the drawbacks they're doing of Batman Begins.
Yeah, and Batman Begins is a great example. You couldn't tell what was going on because, he was so close. If you pulled back, you would have been able to see how Batman fought. Now, that makes sense for Batman because you don't want to know what he's doing. But in this movie, it's a war movie. You want to see what's happening. So I thought that was used to a great effect. And, I mean, I didn't think it was overused.
I don't think it was overused either, yeah.
It was only used maybe 3-4 scenes total.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I thought a lot more. It was going to be used a lot more than it was.
And when it was used, it was very powerful.
Yeah,
it was terrific.
Yeah, I mean, had you overused it, it would have felt cheap. You know, it would have felt like they were just using it to.
I agree.
Yeah, and again, it would have been more like The Matrix. Not to put down The Matrix, but The Matrix used bullet time for freaking everything. While here, they're only using it for about 3 or 4 shots.
Are you using the first Matrix as a reference or the entire series?
Yeah.
Because the first Matrix used it the way we're talking about it. But like the other two Matrix movies,
they've
just kind of
abused
it.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. All right, so fine. Matrix number one as opposed to Matrix two and three.
Well, also yeah. kind of like, you know, when he ended the slowdown?
Yeah.
How the camera was moving throughout the entire thing. Mm-hmm. The camera wasn't in one place. Like, you would be far away from the battle, and he would walk up two steps. He would slow it down so you could see a specific sword thrust. And then he would speed it up a little so it'd be faster so you could see him get to the next move. But then the camera would also move with that. Like, it would rotate 90 degrees and go another three steps. And then you'd see the next move. So it's almost like the camera was moving around them at different speeds. I thought that was cool.
They did that by having three cameras next to each other, side by side, and then like they would zoom in and pan out as needed. So when they edited it together, they had three sources to pull from. So that's how they managed it. It was really neat. I like that trick they did. It just shows you like every single possible angle that you could. Not for every single shot, but like you move from one, and then 3 seconds later you move to the other. Like, pretty seamlessly, so it was pretty cool.
That is really awesome, the fact that that's how they did it.
It gives me hope for Watchmen.
Oh, yeah, well, that's something I wanted to mention. The fact that 300 did so damn good. What was it, 70 million in the first weekend?
Mm-hmm. A little bit over 70. Weekend.
Yeah. Pretty much guarantees, in fact, it does guarantee, that we are going to get a $120 million budget, I believe, on a Watchmen movie.
Awesome.
Yes.
With the Can't director of 300. So, right away, I'm sort of hoping this is going to turn out good. Somewhere right now, Alan Moore is bashing his head up against the wall. Not again, not again. But,
yeah.
God damn it!
Well, the thing
well,
is...
Well, see, here's the thing. That. If Alan Moore really gave a shit about his movies, he wouldn't say, take my name off of it. He would actually want control, like Frank Miller does, over his movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he just...
I think that's why the Alan Moore movies... That's why... You know, sometimes they've gone to shit. I know I liked V for Vendetta, but compared
from
to the comic,
hell
it's nothing. Yeah, From Hell went to shit. You know, and that's because Alan Moore thinks Hollywood's going to fuck it up. Well, they're going to fuck it up if you don't put your input in there on your work.
I think we struck a nerve with Brent. You're cursing like a sailor now.
Hey, well, fuck you. Okay.
It's a cathartic expression. Let him go.
Okay, if Alan Moore is not going to be an executive producer on Watchmen or whatever, then please get Dave Gibbons on there. He drew the fucking book. He has Alan Moore's scripts probably in a bank somewhere. You know, maybe.
Well,
or they exist somewhere that... And Dave Gibbons probably had conversations with Alan Moore that he can tell Zack Snyder, this is what's going on, this is this and this, so this is what is important. Other than just reading
it. I think with something like Watchmen, with so many people could reproduce, you know, why don't you get someone like David Hayter to write the screenplay? You know, he's a huge Watchmen fan.
He
actually submitted a script, I think.
He did, yeah. In fact, actually, and that script was supposed to be amazing, but they've since turned that down and they're going a different route.
Yes, Snyder's... it's switched companies. It's jumped companies. But also, not only that, there's two things we're forgetting about. A, Alan Moore doesn't want to have his comics made into movies. He doesn't want that at all. And so the fact that they're doing it is something he doesn't even care about. So you're not going to see him do executive producer. And the second thing is, Watchmen is not 300. Watchmen is like the definitive superhero book of the past 30 years. It's, you know, deconstruction of the superhero genre. It doesn't exactly compare favorably. I mean, yeah, I'm excited that Watchmen is coming out, but... I don't know how is Zack going to handle that.
Well,
and see, there's
a story.
Here's where I disagree with you. I agree Watchmen is great, but I do not think of Watchmen as the definitive superhero film or superhero story. I think there's nothing superhero about Watchmen.
Wow.
Yes, it's about superheroes, but there's no particular really superhero things they do. They save people from a fire, fine. Blue Beetle style, whatever. The only real superhero thing that's in there is Dr. Manhattan, to me. And it's about old superheroes. But I don't think it's a true superhero story when you're comparing it to the rest of American comics.
Oh, no, it isn't, though. But it's
and
deconstructing the superhero genre.
Okay, deconstructing. But here's my other concern. Watchmen was great when we had 50 years of superhero comics, and then this thing came along. We're not going to have that same effect with the film. I think crossing over to the mainstream audience is going to be much, much harder.
I disagree with that entirely. actually.
Well, okay. Rorschach is a fucking guy.
Brentside.
Yeah. Okay, let me finish.
A lot of
Rorschach
has a history.
Right, there's no history or anything, but it's going to be so... I think Watchmen is going to be... I don't know what the film's going to be like, but I think it's going to be overhyped that people will leave with a bad taste in their mouth because of the hype. It's going to be like Marvel hype, because it's the definitive superhero book or whatever. It's the greatest comic literature, so they're going to be the greatest comic film. It's, you're going to leave with a bad taste of Marvel hype in your mouth.
And I don't think that that's really going to be the way it goes, because... I think already DC knows the property that they have. They know that a lot of comic fans, you know this. People who don't even like comics have read Watchmen and enjoyed it, but it's still just another movie, you know? 300 was not really that overhyped, you know? I feel like this is probably going to get the same sort of hype that 300's going to get, and at the same time, I think that Watchmen is going to be able to get, just like it did with the actual trade paperback, it's going to be able to get people who are not even comic book readers to go to the movies and say, this looks interesting to me, I'm going to sit down and watch it. Specifically because Heroes is so popular now.
Okay, but Heroes, they're not wearing costumes.
They're not, but you know what? It doesn't matter.
Every other superhero film has changed the costume somewhat to make it look real. I think if Zack Snyder is going to do it, I think he's going to stick to that 1986 superhero costume feel, and it's going to look like if you put Wolverine in yellow spandex on film.
No, see, but again,
that's what I'm afraid of.
Their costumes are barely costumes in the first place, all right?
No, Night Owl, come on.
Night Owl is the one exception, okay? But Night Owl's costume would transfer over pretty damn well to film, all right? All you'd have to do is Batmanize it a little bit, yeah. You know, and okay. Be able to make that work.
What about all the other Golden Age heroes? The hooded guy, or hooded Justice, or whatever.
That
guy's got a fucking noose around his neck. What,
dude? See, exactly. Golden Age. It's the past. As long as they do it as flashback, which is what they will do, then you can get away with anything.
See, I think it's gonna have. I think Watchmen, it's gonna bring the comic book people out in droves. But I think it's going to have a harder time crossing over and making the $70 million that 300 did because it's so steeped in the comics.
Okay, how about this? Watchmen as an HBO series instead of a movie.
Yes, it would work better, but that's not how we're getting it.
Yeah, we're getting it as a
feature. We're getting
film.
Preacher as an HBO series, maybe. But we're getting Watchmen as a film.
It's not even maybe. It's pretty much confirmed at this point. So.
Right.
Which is
I heard
good for
some rumblings from some people at school that Watchmen will be released as a 3-hour movie. And when it goes to DVD, right, it's being slated as having some more footage that will exceed over an hour and a half.
I'm sure that's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt in my mind.
It's called The Lord of the Rings Extended Cuts.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, they're going to have to do that with Watchmen because there's so much damn content.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be the first time where they're really going to be doing a... series, well, basically a complete series. It's 12 issues. That's Watchmen. Mm-hmm. You know, V for Vendetta, sure,
yeah,
that's something different.
You're going to cut off some of the intricacies of Watchmen when you translate it to film. You know, you no longer have Night Owl's book. You don't have the pirate story. You know, mm-hmm. Those little things.
Now,
the little
they've said he's going to film the pirate story. They've said he's going to film that. That's what they've what I've heard.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder wants to do it. How he's going to work that in?
Question: will Dr. Manhattan be wearing pants?
I don't think so. He can't for the character.
For sure.
So this movie's going to be rated X?
No,
well,
you can. You can see a guy's nuts. You can see penis as long as it's not hard in an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you have that whole scene where like there's three of them touching her.
Yes, but that's called Sin City.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I haven't seen male genitalia in our movie that's not in silhouette, so I can't comment.
True. Yeah, but and again, 300 and Watchmen are sort of related at this point, so it's okay that we're talking about that. But let's actually swing it back to 300. Just for
Sparta.
Yes, let's get back to Sparta here. One thing that I want to know is your favorite moment of the film. Okay, your favorite moment of the film. Which part captured you more than any of the others? And Juan, let me hear yours first.
Could you come back to me?
Raph, let me hear yours first.
Let me think about this.
Oh, goddamn you all suck.
Really? We're the Pixie Knight people. We're not on top of our game.
Oh, my God.
No, I got one. Okay. My favorite scene is pretty much the death scene when they all die. Like,
yeah.
When, spoiler alert, they all die.
Oh, come on.
I have a feeling anybody listening to this probably already knows.
So I think that when he's like, he gets down on his knees and the guy's narrating it, he took off his shield because it threw off his aim. And all that, I thought that was great. And then, you know, they don't kick as much ass as they do in the rest of the movie, except for the captain over there.
Yeah.
Who throws his shield Captain America style. Rest in peace, Cap.
Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Yeah, it was just a great... That scene was basically what the Spartans are all about. You know, fight or die.
Yeah.
So to watch them go down swinging, it was a really good scene. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, the fight scenes are terrific, too. I love all the fight scenes. All the big lines are awesome. Like,
yeah.
Like tonight we dine in hell, and to come and get them, which is like, it's like everybody's favorite, like, saying in the military, you know, come and get them.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite scenes is probably one of the most laid back, and I'll list two here. The one that I really, really loved was when he's munching on that damn apple.
Oh my God.
I was just about to say that.
That's fucking terrific.
You know, and
that's in the book, too.
I got a new favorite scene. Fuck it. Awesome.
You know,
change it. You can't change it. You're locked in.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The Jew beat you to it, all right?
There's no reason we can't be civil. And he stabs the guy.
That was just
and then awesome. As the guy moves, he kills him.
Yeah.
No mercy.
Exactly. Yeah. But my other favorite scene is actually one of the first in the movie, where, you know, this is Sparta, and then he's kicking him down. They kick him into the damn hole. Juan, you said something about that being filmed in water?
No, the Oracle. No, no, no.
Oh, the Oracle. The Oracle was filmed in water.
The Oracle's drawn-out dance was filmed in water.
Gotcha. Okay.
That could have been much shorter.
Yeah.
No, it couldn't have.
I got a favorite scene, and it's the most comedic scene in the whole movie. It's when he goes to Xerxes, and Xerxes says, "All I need you to do is kneel." And he's like, "Well, you see, all that fighting is giving me a cramp, so that kneeling is not going to happen."
Yeah, and he says it.
Oh, yeah, that scene was hilarious.
He says it like he's from the Bronx.
Yeah, you know, he's like, yeah. I don't care if you're a girl, I'll still punch you in the face.
Yeah.
You know, we our cultures have much to share. Well, I've been sharing my culture with you all morning. That's a terrific line.
And that pan out, that wall of bodies. You know, when you first see that wall of bodies for the first time as they're piling them on, and literally my first response is like, oh, no, they didn't. Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah, and the emissary looking at the wall and then realizing what's inside it,
yeah.
You know? Because there's more stones in there. That first one, there's more stones than there were bodies. And then as you got closer, she was like, uh-oh.
I get myself into... Oh, no.
Oh, and also, nice subtle touch, the fact that there were all these different birds flying overhead, and you saw, like, the bugs flying all around the bodies. Awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely awesome. Had it just been decaying bodies, that just wouldn't have been any fun.
My favorite parts...
That's a dung beetle.
Crikey!
Two things really stuck out to me. I really enjoyed seeing the phalanx work.
Uh-huh.
In the first battle scene, we're in the Hell's Gates,
yeah.
And it's the push!
Yeah.
And they push him forward. The first line pushes him forward, and the second line jabs him with the spears. And then the shields come back, and they do it again, and again, and again. I thought that was great. The other thing I really enjoyed, even though it wasn't in the book, was seeing how Leonidas got that fucking scar on his helmet.
Ooh, yeah.
That was cool, when that just giant just takes it on his helmet, and it's like...
So that actually was not in the book?
No.
Wow. Huh.
Like, he walks around. That's how you can tell it's Leonidas in the book. He's got, like, a scar on his helmet, and he's got the plume.
Wow.
Yeah. No, you know what was great, too? When they all get back into formation, they all do it at the same time, and it's just awesome to see them as a unit. Like, shields up, spears out. Like, they all do it at the same time, exact same time. And then you see the look on the other guy's face, and you go, oh, shit. What the fuck am I doing here?
Oh, by the way.
And then Captain America just quit. Wait, this is a civil war, right?
No. You think this A on my forehead stands for France? Well, I guess it does. Oh, the irony.
Oh, did you guys see the Civil War Frontline 11? The
house? Yes,
that
I
was
did.
Terrific.
Yeah.
That was
it's terrific. Captain A. Francica.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's like, what the fuck does MySpace have to
have
do
you
with
checked
this
your MySpace,
freedom,
Captain
fucking
America?
Bitch? Yeah.
We should call him Captain Internet if he knows what MySpace is.
MySpace.com/ Hey, it's Captain America.
Frankly, I'd be more concerned that Captain America was on MySpace using it than he was giving a shit about the state of the country.
Yeah, it's like, I know what you're doing, little Johnny, and it's not pretty.
Captain America's patrolling MySpace.
All those pumps inside your
God damn it. Oh my God.
Captain America, the MySpace cop. It's what
yeah,
it
or he's going to NASCAR races because that's what people in America do.
He's
going to
show up on Dateline NBC.
It's what I do because I'm Captain America.
Were you having sexual conversations with this young lady? You Captain freaking America, answer the goddamn question.
Actually, sorry, Sally Floyd. I think more people in America masturbate and have sex than go to a NASCAR.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Of course.
Seriously, Sally.
The internet is for porn. The internet is for porn. So grab your dick and double click. Porn.
Yeah, no, I mean...
That's going to be my new MySpace name, that little song.
That shows how much Paul Jenkins knows about America, though, really.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Oh,
wait. 300.
I just had something in my head. Oh, yeah. Was that opening sequence all in the book? The opening sequence about him growing up and all that and the wolf?
Yeah.
Yeah,
good.
It was
spread out a little.
They did it. Yeah, this is more spread out in the film, which I think benefited.
Good. I'm glad.
The film.
Okay, because I'm kind of happy that was originally there. But you know, the whole thing about the helmet and all that, and the chip in the helmet makes me kind of think like, wow, if what would have happened had he ever made like a director's cut of 300. You know, like actually.
What do you mean?
Well, if say the actual graphic novel. You know, if perhaps maybe this was some of the stuff that Frank Miller was thinking about or thought about afterwards that he might have just, like, clued the other guys in on. Hey, this is a great way to do it. This is what I thought about.
Director's commentary.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear Frank on director's commentary.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be terrific.
Well, you know that they're probably going to have it for the actual movie
definitely.
Once it's done. So, yeah. Now, are you going to own this on DVD?
Yes.
Special edition.
Yes. Are you going
to
hold out?
I'm locked into that.
Oh, yeah?
I'm getting if the special edition doesn't come out first, then I'll just get the regular one, and then I'll get the special edition.
No. I held out for Sin City.
Collector's edition?
I held out for the Sin City collector's edition. I will hold out for 300, and I held out for King Kong.
Yeah, the 300 collector's edition is going to come with a small little helmet.
Yeah.
That'd be
and
awesome.
A little sword.
That'd be
and
awesome.
And a spear.
Yeah. So you can kill your parents.
Yes. Finally!
Because that's what they do in Sparta!
Okay.
They kill their parents.
He was like this in the theater the whole time.
No.
Yes.
Dude. No rap was like that in the theater, man. I was sitting there enjoying myself, having a good time.
I got sucked into the movie most of the time. The only time I screamed in the actual movie theater was when everybody else screamed, "This is Sparta," because that was just a fucking awesome moment.
That was the loudest I'd heard anybody in the theater since I'm tired of these motherfucking snakes on a motherfucking plane.
Don't bring back those memories.
I'm tired of these snakes. We have to put a barrier between us and the snakes.
We're on the fucking plane.
I haven't even
that
seen
makes
that
me
want
to see that movie now.
Dude, you have to see Snakes on a Plane. You have
to
see
it. Is it out yet on DVD?
Yeah, it's out.
Okay, I'm getting it.
It's out. It just came out a couple days ago. Actually, not a couple days ago. A couple months ago, actually.
On special collector, special two-disc collector's edition.
Yeah.
It comes with a real snake.
Oh, the Superman collection is available on Amazon again, so I'm getting it.
I got it.
I know you got it.
I still haven't got my replacement disc.
I got mine.
I got mine quick. It took like 2 weeks.
I just got mine like 3 weeks ago. It took about a month.
Yeah. Oh,
it took less than that for me.
Well, maybe you live closer to them. I don't know. Maybe you sent it in
fucking
first.
Fucking Costco.
Costco. I'm going to run off.
They have the cheapest price, though, Costco.
Yes.
Yeah, it was $60.
Okay, this show is not turning into a Costco advertisement. I will not allow that.
Do you want money or not?
Yeah, but first they have to actually solicit. Jeez. My
God. Well, Costco might pay better than New York Comic Con.
Is bigger better at... Oh, wait, no. That we don't have to do that anymore.
And over!
Did you get the one about Sci-Fi Friday yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez. All right, so...
We're going in the back.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God.
What do you want to see... Other than the featurettes, what do you want to see on a 300 special edition?
Deleted scenes, obviously. I want to see an extended cut with deleted scenes.
Of what? There's nothing deleted, though.
Yeah. No. There is stuff deleted because I want to see whether or not they actually tried the cliff scene or not. I'm thinking.
What do you mean?
With the hunchback.
Oh, okay.
It's possible that they might have tried that and, you know, decided, no, it doesn't look good, so they got rid of it. There have to be deleted scenes. There's always deleted scenes in things.
Yeah, but this was pretty much shot for shot.
Yes, but it's possible they might have filmed extra scenes.
So, like, extra fighting?
Yeah, extra fighting, and also it's possible that there might have been some subplots that they cut. You know, there's always something. That's what I'm saying. You know, and I want to see the always something.
More David Wenham. We need more voiceover.
I want to see how he got from Middle Earth. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
There's a story there.
Shut the fuck
up. He walks, because that's what they do.
I want my cowbell. I have a fever. I have a fever, and the only cure is more cowbell.
Cling, 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 cling.
But yeah, no. I mean, I'd like to see a making of featurette, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
And also, I want a shot-by-shot comparison. I want somebody to do. I want them to do like a shot by shot comparison.
Oh, like what they did with that Hellboy.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I want to see shot by shot comparison between the actual graphic novel and the movie.
I want to see Frank Miller on the DVD talking about it.
That'd be nice.
He's a Spartan in the background. You just can't see him because he's short.
Yeah, Stan Lee's in it. He's the guard.
I want a feature. I want a featurette.
Who's the dead body in the wall?
I want to see a featurette about Frank Miller in the comic first of all.
Yeah, definitely.
Number one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I want to see the usual how the project came to fruition bullshit. And then I want to see all that other stuff. You know, the behind the scenes.
And a screen test for Gerard Butler.
I want to see the workout. I want to see the training.
Oh, yeah. No, that'd be awesome.
Speaking of which...
Your own 300 workout. How to do that.
I can tell you right now.
Why, Raph? How do you do a 300 workout?
It's 25 pull-ups, 50 deadlifts at 135 pounds... 50 push-ups, 50 box jumps with 24-inch boxes, 50 floor wipers at 135 pounds, 50 KB clean and press at 36, 25 pull-ups, and that's 300 reps total, according to what
and
is
a
this?
Lot of baby oil.
Yes.
And six Josh shots Mirage. Of bourbon.
Typepod.com. It's on YouTube. The video is on YouTube.
Actually. Oh wow! That's awesome.
You can see the training.
Ooh, you know what? Actually, bloopers. I want bloopers.
Oh, yeah.
All right, because you know the bloopers for this have to be hilarious. Like, okay, imagine a blooper where the hunchback falls over.
or when he says, this is Sparta! I need some water here.
Better yet, this is Middle Earth! Sparta. Oh.
When he spits on the camera from Sparta!
And then you get, hello, Leonidas.
Oh, yeah. I want to make love to you, Leonidas.
Oh, God.
Gerard Butler just turns around. Hey.
Cue the porn music. Bam, bam, bam,
bam, bam, bam. Yeah, I want to see how they did the Oracle scene, just so we can see more of the Oracle.
Oh, and also some of the making of the CGI. I want to see the making of the special effects.
Totally. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
To see like a shot-by-shot breakdown, like what they did in Quirks 2. When they showed how to make that, had they made that opening with the fire?
I think they have it on iTunes already.
Oh, cool.
I have something like the making of 300 or whatever. I downloaded it off iTunes. It was one of the first things I got when I got my iPod.
Uh-huh.
No, on the 300 movie website, they have a video blog like Peter Jackson did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah,
nine of them. One of them is like about, a lot of them are about characters and stuff and costuming.
Yeah.
But there is one about the workout.
Oh, cool.
And that looks intense.
Good.
So I don't want to see these on the DVD because I've already seen them.
If they put
them on the DVD, I want to see expanded versions or, you know, I don't know, put them somewhere else.
A half-hour fight scene.
No, but again, like I said, show me some extended fight scenes at one point. You know, if there is an extended cut with you know, some extended fight scenes, I'd be a happy man. Because the more fight, the better.
Mm-hmm. They'll probably show the other Greeks that were there.
Probably. It's possible.
No, you didn't really see them fight.
I don't think they played a big role in the...
You know what? Actually, here's a good question before we get close to wrapping it up. Why do you think this movie made $70 million, as opposed to some of the other ones? Why do you think 300 had that large an audience? Because, again, 300, you know, sure, it's Frank Miller, but it's 300. You know, it's not, like, one of the most well-known things. It's not DC or Marvel, so... Yeah, it's Dark Horse, and it's not often where you find a Dark Horse property other than, obviously, well, the obvious one, Hellboy, actually doing something this good in the box office. So why did this movie make $70
million? It's because it wasn't slated as a comic book movie.
Yeah.
People did, it was 300, and it had blood and people falling off a cliff. That sells. You know, it wasn't pegged, you know, like, if you see webs, you think Spider-Man. If you hear that music, you think Superman. You know, if you see bats, it's Batman. This is 300. It's something completely separate. A lot of people are familiar with what happened, right? And maybe they feel some type of attachment to it. Maybe they're just curious. And word of mouth spread. And it's a good movie, you know. Regardless of its little shortcomings, I think it was a good movie, and word of mouth has spread.
They followed the Road to Perdition map, as I like to call it, because Road to Perdition is a movie. It's a graphic novel, but it's a movie. You know, so many people still to this day don't even realize that's a graphic novel.
And that's a fantastic graphic novel.
The novel came out afterwards because the movie is so good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you read that graphic novel?
I haven't yet, but I've always wanted to.
Bits and pieces.
It's a must read. It really is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely want to get my hands on it eventually, so I'd love to get that done there. And, I mean, the movie's great. I love the movie. Mm-hmm. Tom Hanks is just terrific in that, so.
I think, I was going to just get back to the thing. I think it's successful because if you look at it, if you look at how the years divide up for movies, I think November till January is Oscar season. All those big, dramatic Oscar movies that win the awards, that have all the great acting and everything, they get played really heavily then. February is more like the romantic comedy you get, and then you get like Marvel will throw out occasional superhero movie. Then March is usually a quiet month, and then like for us, like okay, we're all guys here, we're all comic book fans, but we're also guys. When do the really big guy movies come out? The big action movies, the big you know, that's May, June, July. I think it hit this really feels like a summer blockbuster to me.
Yeah.
Like it feels like one of those movies, and it's hitting early enough so that it's only competing with these minor movies that what's it competing with? Ghost Rider, which has been out for almost a month already.
Yeah.
What else is out? I don't even know what else is out.
Zodiac,
yeah. Which isn't that big a movie. It's not a huge blockbuster movie. 300 is just really so well placed in the schedule. Like if this was coming out a week after Spider-Man, I think I'd get killed. Even if it was a better movie than Spider-Man, which we don't know yet, but let's say it was, it would still get killed by Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I think they did a really great job of putting this in a place where people will be looking forward to it because it's the end of the dramas and the romantic comedies and all these other movies. And it's also, there's no competition. It's really its own movie right now. There's nothing else like 300 out right now. So it was really poised to succeed in this position.
Or do you think that 2006 didn't really have that huge action hit?
Yeah, we were overdue.
MI3? That was a huge hit.
X3.
That was a long time ago.
X3.
X3 was a comic book movie, but it wasn't a purely action.
It had some damn good fight scenes, though.
It had more fight scenes than the first two combined.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No plot.
And my favorite part is that not only did it have the fight scenes, but then the DVD has extended fight scenes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did see those.
Yes,
yeah,
so, I mean,
the one thing I didn't like.
Did you get the regular one?
I got the regular one because the special edition and just has a comic. That's all it is. They charge like $10 more for a freaking comic.
I think there's supposed to be a different edition coming out.
Oh yeah,
I haven't picked it up yet because I heard it was coming down the pipe.
Well, I got my special edition for like $16. So
I actually still have to pick up X-Men 1.5, X-Men 2, and X3. So. Okay, so some of you might be thinking this is kind of a really weird place to end the episode. Well, it kind of is. we had about 20, 25 minutes more worth of stuff that we did. However, my recorder actually was low on batteries, and, well, that did not really come out. However, we basically just missed a bunch of silliness, and mind you, of course, silliness is a good thing. This show relies on silliness to succeed, but we just missed about 20, 25 minutes of us being incredibly, incredibly silly. It was about 2 a.m., and things went absolutely crazy after a while. So my apologies that you guys are missing out on that, but you're not missing nearly as much as you would if we really were going more in-depth with 300. The only things that we really missed out on with the very, very end of this recording are our final thoughts on 300, and we all know what they are already, that we all absolutely loved it, and we would like to see something along the lines of 300 again, something that is as close to the comic book and yet still varying enough in order to make itself different than the comic in the future. So that's pretty much how we wrapped it up. And like I said, plenty of silliness, but what are you going to do? So I'm actually going to wrap this episode up. We have one episode that has already been recorded. Episode 36 has been recorded. It's part one of our Independence view, as I have a one-on-one interview with Dave Wachter, which is going to be released soon. And then part two is going to be with Steve Bryant. I'm unsure whether or not it's going to be one-on-one or whether or not it's going to be with somebody else, but it will definitely be coming up very, very soon. So please watch this space for upcoming episodes of Comic Timing. There'll be a 36 part one and a 36 part two, and then from there, plenty more to come. Also, we're going to be doing a 22 pages upcoming, and we're actually going to be doing Nova number one. I figured that's a great way to go with the first 22 pages, which was actually Annihilation number one, and Nova number one is stemming out of Annihilation, so it makes sense to do that. So our first 22 pages in a while will be Nova number one, and that comes out pretty soon. Nova comes out on April 11th, so watch the stands for it. If you already ordered it, then obviously enjoy it, and then we'll talk about it on Comic Timing. And if not, if you want to pick it up on the stand so you'll be able to listen in on that episode of Comic Timing, I definitely would thank you for doing so. So 22 pages number 3 will be coming up soon. It will be Nova number 1. That hits the stands on April 11th. I want to thank, once again, Raph and Juan from Geeks Unite over at geeksunite.libsyn.com for joining me for this episode. They are awesome, awesome, awesome folks. Raph's been on before. It was great to finally have Juan on, even if his computer was acting up. And of course, thanks to Nightwing BK on the forums, Brent Cassina, and of course, his BK's Bullets has a most recent BK's Bullets on the most recent episode of Raging Bullets, which they recorded about a month ago, and I finally made it on. That was actually Raph and Nightwing BK doing something, and actually Brent and myself will have something on the anniversary episode of Raging Bullets. I don't want to give anything away, but we had a lot of fun doing that, so that's upcoming as well. So other than that, that's pretty much it. So once again, thanks everybody for joining me in here, and let me do the end of the episode here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum, graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. And we have a very large listing of comics podcasts over at the CGS forums, on the Comic Timing forums. And also, please dig us on dig.com. There's a huge listing on there as well for dig.com. And please send in your iTunes reviews. They are greatly appreciated. So for Juan, for Raph, for Brent, I'm Ian Levinstein, reminding everybody that there's always time for comics. Okay, I swear, if that actually did happen... I mean, it's bad enough.
I mean, know you're recording this in the background.
Well, no, I was not, actually. Surprisingly enough. Surprisingly enough, I don't need to know everything you're saying when I'm not around.
Good. Because that one comment, Brent, oh man.
Oh my god, yeah.
Okay, well, now you must fill me in. How much I...
No yanking you.
Okay, oh, okay.
No,
okay, well, again, fuck you all. Okay.
See, but that,
and when you say the word E-force, all I can think of is G-force.
I can only think of Alex Rodriguez making an error.
E-Rock.
E-4.
That's an E-4, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an E-4.
Yeah.
Wait, no, what are you talking about? That's second base, dude.
Oh, really? Oh, shit. Oh, shit. No, because I'm thinking it's first, second... It's catcher, second, third, fourth. First, second, third, fourth.
No,
third.
No, fourth would be Robinson Cano making an error.
Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
So it's E6 then.
Yes.
Okay. For the Yankees podcast.
Fourth base, is that anal?
Oh, God.
300 people, 300.
I was a fetus, thank you. Jeez.
That's one hell of a temptation.
You're a twinkle in your mom's eye, and you remember those SNL episodes she watched?
Yes, exactly. Hey, I went to the Baseball Hall of Fame while I was in her stomach, so...
That's what'd you see?
Oh, you know, I was able to see, like, the little hole, you know, through her belly button, so it was pretty good.
That's where a belly button is. It's a looking glass.
Was it like a fisheye lens too? Like, you know, the peephole in the door?
More of a peephole.
So when you have cesarean, are you going through the looking glass?
Okay.
Would you take the red pill, Neo, or the blue pill?
I'm gonna have to play the theme song about 3 times at the end of the episode. I haven't.
Oh my god. Back to Sparta.
Oh.
I'm so back to fuck off.
Yeah. Actually, I need squeaking. Yeah.
Anyway.
I'll be right back, but actually, while I'm...
No, next 5 Enpist here today.
While I'm gone, I'll ask Brent this question so you can talk while I'm gone.
Because you know I'll talk while you're gone.
Exactly.
Forever.
Yeah, exactly. By the time I'm back, you know, you'll still be talking. It's all good. That pan out when you see the body of walls. Oh,
yeah, awesome.
That was awesome.
That body, the body of walls? What?
The walls of bodies. The wall of bodies. Go to your room. All right.
I'm in my room.
Oh, fuck you. All right. Wait, hold on. Let me say that again. All right.
This podcast is rated X.
Yes, rated X for hardcore nudity. All right.
Whoa. Who's showing off their podcast and junk?
I'm shocked there actually is not a podcast yet called Podcasting Together.
That's gonna be mine when I start one.
P4, a podcast about people who do podcasts about podcasts.
What you gonna do with all that junk? All that junk inside your
trunk. Except inside your trunk. I'm gonna get you drunk, get you love drunk on my home.
Comic Noob Dire Smarky comment, here we come.
Oh, again, like I said, we have to play the fucking theme song like 3 times at the end of the episode.